You are listening to the Barry Long Audio, No Choice, No Unhappiness, formerly titled Gold Coast Talk, July 1993. For more information, visit www.barrylong.org.
Welcome to the Course in Being on this blue, temperate, midwinter Saturday afternoon, 31st July, on the Gold Coast in Australia. As you probably know, on next Saturday I give a meeting in Sydney, and on the Sunday I fly out to Holland, thence to Germany, thence to England, and thence to the Baltic, and thence home again to this lovely Gold Coast. Now today I'm going to touch on some subjects. I'm going to list them for you before we start, and I trust we're going to reach them. But after each topic, I'm going to ask you to ask questions so we can go further into each in your experience. So I won't talk for long, and I'll rely on you to open up the discussion a little bit more deeply with your questions. So some of the things that I trust we're going to reach today are giving life what life wants, or you could put it, if you're big enough, giving God what God wants, but not according to any Bible, to any religion, to any code, because no Bible, no religion or code has any idea of what God wants. Only I, the individual, in the moment, sitting on that chair listening to the words, only I can know any moment what God wants, what life wants. And we'll be going into that. Then, two keys to being responsible. Then, where there's not enough love, I turn to sex. And I'll be asking you to give me examples of that in your life and in the life of this society as you see it, to make the point for us all. Then I'm going to introduce a little whimsy, perhaps a little self-indulgence. I'm going to sing you a little song, and I want to talk about popular songs. Then, to say a little more about woman's change of life that I spoke briefly about at the end of the last meeting. Then, what monkeys look like to each other. Then, absence is the place, and stillness is the way. Then I'm going to tell you about the worldwide shortage of memory and the disastrous effect that has had on everybody. I trust then I'll be able to talk about glamour. And perhaps if we've got the time, we'll talk about what your values are. What values you, the individual listening to these words, what values you are concerned with. Good. So, giving life or God what God wants. As I say, no Bible, irrespective of who you are, what you believe in, no Bible knows the truth or knows anything about God or life. All Bible's written words, spoken words, are out of context of the whole. Bibles and religions and codes of honor or anything else are far for the unenlightened. An enlightened being is a very simple being, and it's only because you have complicated your life and your being that you think you are not enlightened. An enlightened being, which is purely enlightened being, is to be able to know now what God wants without reference to anyone or anything. What does God or life want of you now? Would anyone like to answer that? Now, don't talk intellectually, please. Because if you answer, then you've got to maintain that all the time. Because God doesn't play around, you know? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'd like to answer that because it's a question that I came with. And for me, it means that I can't want anything anymore.
For me, it means that I can't want anything anymore. That's pretty direct, isn't it? Because to give God what God wants or life what life wants surely has to mean that I can't want anything, because what I want obviously can't be what God wants, because there's only one want. Yeah, so you must give up your petty little wants. Yes, indeed, Gabriel.
The big ones.
Yeah, oh yes, well, yeah, to me the big ones are petty ones, right? Right. So, now, how can we apply that? Can we apply that to your life? It's no good listening to what Gabriel said or what I'm saying. No point at all just to hear it. What are you going to do about it? What do you want? Right, I'll ask the gentleman here in the blue shirt. What do you want? Now, I'm not putting you on the spot. I just want you to look inside. When did you last say, I want, to yourself in bed at night or in the morning when you woke up, or I wish, or I want? What did you last say? Or do you not want? I'm not putting it on you. Perhaps you don't. Or now. You want the world. Now, what does that mean? The world is a generic, meaning a general term. You've got to be specific to find the truth. What do you want? I want peace. Now, one of the things that the human race always is looking for is some generic, and this is not, I thank you for the response, this is not to accuse you or criticize you in any way. We're always after peace, or we're after happiness, or we're after some ideal, because peace has to be an ideal, doesn't it? The whole world's been looking for peace for how long? And there's more wars on the earth now than ever. So an ideal is something that you're trying to find, and you'll never find an ideal, for there is no ideal that is true, ever. So peace is an ideal. Now you tell me nice and specifically, right down there in the gritty, smelly, you know, earthy, wet stuff, you tell me what you want. What you, in your being, what you want. Freedom from unhappiness. There again. Again, that is, the human mind goes into orbit. It always goes into orbit, the human mind. It never goes straight. So again, the gentleman is speaking in orbit, going into a circle. I want freedom from unhappiness. No, no, no. You got to tell me what you're unhappy about. You see, that's nice and gritty, right down to where it hurts. But I'm asking you what you want, so we won't go on to the unhappiness that will lead, what all wanting leads to unhappiness, so we can get hold of what you want. Anyway, let me leave it with you. You've opened this up for us. Now, the gentleman in the pink t-shirt, please. Yeah. Your name?
Peter.
Yes, Peter. What do you want, Peter?
I guess I want to find me.
I want to find me, says Peter. Another orbital statement. Because there's nothing closer than me, surely, to the person listening to these words or to Peter asking them. I said, you know where me is, don't you, Peter? Do you feel it now? For instance, where you feel hungry is not a bad place to start. I always feel hungry in me. Right? And then we could take it further. I feel angry in me. And then we could say, I feel love or joy in me. So we know where me is. So, you know where that is not. It's not a direct statement that you made. Do you hear that? Because me is closer than breathing. So what do you want? You've got to be specific in the world. You've got to say what you want in the world, in human experience. What do you want? The rest is all religious nonsense. You can't want God. You're just impossible to want God. You can't want love. It's impossible to want love. What you've got to get rid of is what's in the way of God. What's in the way of love. That's what you've got to find. And that is what you want. The wanting is in the way. Right. Someone I'd like to help us. Yes, this lady, you're...
Rachel.
Rachel, yes, Rachel. So we'll cut through it all. I'll give you as much as I can, a straight and direct answer. Now, God, where I come from, or life, wants me to be free of unhappiness. And that is to enjoy my life. Now, if you've got another God than that, then you've probably got a Christian God. Or a Mohammedan God, perhaps, where you've got to wait till you die and then all the gopis will be around you in the garden. Or any other of these religious gods. So, my God, which is my life, indicates to me, and please test this in your experience, that it is my God's pleasure and my life's pleasure that I be free of unhappiness so that I can enjoy my life. Anybody want to argue with that? Right. So then the first thing is, if I want anything, that want will get in the way of the enjoyment of my life now. Because I'm looking to some sort of future instead of now. Now it is God's or life's pleasure to provide everything that I need in that body listening to these words now. Can anybody show me anything in this moment that you need that is not provided now? That's not bad, is it? With possibly over 100 people here. Surely, one will be able to tell me something that you need that is not provided now, if there's any truth in it. Please, anybody? Well, that has to be revealing, doesn't it? So if you don't want any... Yes, here's a lady's hand gone up.
It's not like a relationship with man who's my equal.
This moment now?
Not right at this
moment. No, that's right, because everything that you want is already provided now. Enough air? Nobody taking your money? Nobody imposing on your love. Everything now is provided. So what happens when you go outside the room? What happens at the breakfast table? Do you mean to say someone snatches your food every morning? Someone puts a pillow over your head and you can't breathe? What happens? Yes? Did you want to say something? Now, can we get to the point? This is the point. Why do you get unhappy? Because you start to want something. Now, the lady quite rightly says she wants a relationship of a man who's equal to her. Now, that's a good way down the track, because he's obviously not here now. And yet, she is not unhappy now. So it is the want, if she starts to dwell on that as thought, if she wakes up in the morning and lies on the pillow, breathing, warm, everything provided, not even hungry, and she starts to think about that want, she will get lonely. She will go deeper into herself, which is her emotions just inside her body, her subconscious, and with every thought she will get more and more unhappy, more frustrated, more despairing, until she's upset herself for the day. Now, that's how you do it. That's how you become unhappy. Yes, sir?
Pastor,
yes.
I had to want to come here, so there was a want involved.
I had to want to come here, so there was a want involved. Did you? Did you want to come here, or did you just come here?
No, I had to make arrangements.
Yes, but your whole life is spent in doing what you do. As long as you don't want, as soon as a want arises in you, that means a reflection in yourself of an alternative to what you're doing now, isn't it? I'm doing this, and up comes an alternative that I would like to go there. That's the biggest yes in you. And you have to see, is that what God wants in your experience for you to come here, or did you want, was this a little want in you? Now, the best test of God's want is that what God wants, as I say, is for you to be free of unhappiness, for you to enjoy your life. And anything that contributes towards that as a whole, and not as some temporary excitement which only contributes to the wanting and the unhappiness, something that contributes to the whole, then that is what you, the man, wants. You want to be free of your own wanting. So you come here to hear this question being addressed in your own experience. So this represents putting your life into the context of the whole. And a spiritual man or woman will always put God or life first in every situation. So could we define again what God or life is? The opportunity for me to be free of unhappiness so that I may enjoy my life more and more. That's why you came. You will always put that first, and if you don't, you will suffer. With life and love and God and truth and peace, you have to want it enough to die for it, to put it always before every other consideration. That's what it means to die for something. So to discover what life or love wants, You have to be able to discern. What will I die for? What do I truly want? Do I want to be free of unhappiness enough? Or do I want some temporary happiness, such as a drug, or to follow someone, or to believe in some Bible, or to believe in some Christ, or to believe in something else? To believe. Do I want to believe? Or do I want some temporary excitement? If you want that, and put that before being free of unhappiness, then you must be unhappy. Now, we've got to pursue this because it's very difficult to get it together in your own life. So the point that I was just making is, you do not want for anything at this moment. Now, what's going to happen when you start to get unhappy? It means that when you're outside, you're going to want something, or you're going to think that you're missing out on something. Now, what's the truth of life? When you go outside, there's going to be various events are going to confront you, and you're going to do what you do. Now, when an event presents itself in front of you, that's when you can look at, what does God want, or what does life want of me? Bearing in mind that life wants me to be free of unhappiness. So as I address this situation, this event that's come up in front of me, can I address it not to make me unhappy, but to free me from any unhappiness in me? That's the question, because that would be God's pleasure. If I'm in an argument, come on, let's get down to the kitchen sink. If I'm in an argument, what are we arguing about? Because this argument is making you unhappy and me unhappy. That can't be God's will, because it's making you unhappy and me unhappy. You could say, why are you being unhappy? Well, because I'm arguing with my partner or my love. My God, if I'm arguing with my partner or my love, then that's certainly an unhappy situation, isn't it? So why don't I go not into my partner and say, well, what's wrong with you? Why don't I go in and say, what are we arguing about? Instead of that, we usually want to go into how hurt I am with you, and you into how hurt you are with me, and you will notice that that is what I call self-consideration. You must not go into how hurt I am at any time. That is selfishness. Now, when you're having an argument, isn't it true that I feel hurt? So instead of finding out what the heck am I hurt about, I'm only interested in being hurt. So therefore I am wanting something for myself, for my hurt. I want you to take this hurt from me. I want you to take it from me. I want somebody to take it from me, instead of looking at what the heck am I hurt about. In other words, what am I expecting you to do to save me of my hurt? Now, both of us are doing this if we're arguing, unless we insist on saying, I want to know what we're arguing about. As soon as you start to find out what you're arguing about between you, you start to find the awful truth. Somebody wants something that the other doesn't want. So not wanting something is often as bad as wanting something. Gabriel's point. I mustn't want anything. And I mustn't not want either. But let's put that in a context, a practical context. For instance, I suspect that my body doesn't want to drink something that smells like chlorine. I suspect that. I wouldn't know, would I, until I start to drink it or smell it. I suspect that my body would go, no thanks. I suspect that I would even run away. So what have I got to think about? See, nobody wants not to survive. Nobody wants to have to be injured. Nobody wants to hurt their body and suffer pain. So that's all looked after. That's not a want. That's built into the mechanism. We must be absolutely practical. And nobody wants to be unhappy, really. Subconsciously they want to be unhappy, but in the conscious part of us, where we see the trees and the birds, nobody wants to be unhappy up here. But my goodness, just down inside our bodies, just in the subconscious, is myself. And that's not up here, that's down there. And that determines most of my life and my wants. And I'm always looking for someone to put myself on up here. So I've got to be very careful up here to make sure that myself down there doesn't put itself on the situation with my partner, with my job or anything, because it's in the dark down there, hidden. And we think, like all the scientists, that everything's fine up here, you know? Everything's going fine. We've had a union vote, and we're all going on strike. Everything's fine. But down inside of everybody is this very plastic, fluid stuff called self, emotion. And it's determining what's going to happen that night at home, whether you and I are going to argue. Not about whether we're going on strike. Because if we both agreed that it was right to go on strike, we would have no argument about it. But one of us is likely to say, well, we won't have any money, will you, if you do that? Why are you doing that for? And the man tries to explain, well, if I don't do it, they're going to do such and such to me, and I'm going to be ostracized. And the woman says, but we want to do this and we want to do that, instead of being both together as partners. You do everything together. Give up your wants in partnership. Surely. You want to keep your individual wants in partnership? You're in conflict. For partnership has to be an action of love, surely. And love is union. And if you're not prepared to come together in union, both wanting the same thing, then you're doomed to argument and unhappiness. So, I just said wanting the same thing. How can two people want the same thing? Quite simply, I want what God or life wants, and that is for me to be free of unhappiness. So in every situation with my partner, that's what I address. Why am I unhappy with the situation? I address that. Not the fact that I am unhappy, what will I do? How am I going to find this release? Have you got it? I must find the truth. All right, anybody want to ask a question as we go on or add to that? Okay. Yes. I have two small children living with me. Looking at my life, I see I put them before God. Yes? Well, that's very good. That you only have to see, right? Go on.
Well, I'm very unhappy.
I'm very unhappy. Right. Now, you always, always will be unhappy if you put children, lover, God, job, money, anything before life or God. And I'm not talking with this Christian nonsense. Right? None of that. I'm talking about life, which is now. Right. I just want to make sure that there's no religious bias in what I'm saying. Now, the question is, we've mentioned the two children, and you've mentioned being unhappy. Why are you unhappy?
It is a really big conflict to me. God has always been the first thing for me.
Okay. God has always been the first thing for me. It's a real conflict in me. Why?
I have these two children, and I can't seem to get the focus straight.
Now I have got these two children, and I can't get the focus straight. You are right. Woman and man often do this. They put the children, especially children, before God. But you can reverse the situation because you love God, because I just heard you say you love God. You got love God, but you looked out of the corner at your eye at these two beautiful little bodies that were born, and you miss God just for a minute. And that minute goes on and on and on. So, what do? In the situation, you say, I have two beautiful children, and you say, I will give them everything that I know is right from my love of God within me, but I will not give them what I know is not right, even if it kills me, because you've got to die for God, you see. I will not give them what is not right in my knowledge inside of me. But what parents do is give in to their sentimental love of their children. And so they say, well, they try to be strong and firm to bring them up rightly. They try to be strong and firm, and then halfway through it, they give up being strong and firm and relent, because the little children, they don't want to make them unhappy. Or they indulge them. They give them Christmases and birthday parties without telling them what Christmas and birthday parties are about. You've got to be firm with the children. Love them. But do not give them what you know is not right. So as if they're emotional. If they start playing up, then you have to. If it means sitting up all night, you must not give in to the emotion. And you must not get emotional either, because that is not God's pleasure for you to get emotional and unhappy. And you must not give in to emotion in the other, for the children, once they start to get away in the subconscious with their emotion, they will pursue that all their lives. So it is the job of the parent to take that emotionality out of them as much as they possibly can. Not by saying, love Jesus or love God, that's nonsense. You have to introduce them to the fact of mother. You are mother, and I'll be talking about that later. You are the mother. You are responsible for God, woman. You are woman in God's clothes. Right? Woman is God in God's suit. And you are responsible for that God and that life to the little ones. And so you tell them about what life is. But if you are emotional yourself, you won't be able to tell them what life is. You'll tell them what you think life is. You'll tell them, for instance, that everybody's got to suffer. Like the Christians tell them. I come along and say, that is a lie, my son, my daughter. Nobody has to suffer. Everybody has to know pain if they fall over, or they've got to go through an operation, or whatever it is. Everybody's got to know pain, my son and daughter, but not everybody has to suffer. Nobody has to suffer. For suffering was invented by priests and liars and cheats of the human race. The only suffering is in myself. And if you want to indulge yourself by believing in anything that anybody has ever told you, then you will indeed suffer. You must be true. Now you as woman know what is right for that child in the moment. Woman, mother, especially someone who loves God. Then you love the child with a distance like cosmic space that says, I love you, my child, but I will not give you what you want. I will give you what you need. And until such times as you are old enough to know for yourself what you need, I will give you what you need, but never what you want. The child then gets to know the difference and starts itself to be free, freer inside. So do your best with your children, right? Life has presented you with those children to just do the job. Do your best. Do it. Do it with an open heart, a joy, because it's a joy to look after the children as long as they know where they stand because you are honest and straight with them. You will feel a release in that. But if you have a partner, a husband, and he is not with you, then it becomes difficult because he might have other values and he will indoctrinate them with that. Some belief system. Do you?
I don't have a belief system, but I mean, it doesn't stay with
me. Okay. Still, that makes it difficult. Any other influence, you have to be responsible for your children and in this situation you've described to me. Is that okay? And enjoy it. And love them. But not sentimentally. Love them. You have to be sentimental to love a child. Or each other. Right. Two keys to being responsible. Oh, excuse me. Yes, this gentleman? So, you said, I live alone, did you?
Mm.
And I feel this drive in me to go out and seek company.
Yes.
Is that right?
Mm.
Now, I live alone, and I feel a drive in me to seek company. Everybody enjoys company, don't they? The question is, what company? But everybody, in the first instance, enjoys company. So why wouldn't the natural drive or the natural being in you, when it arises, would go and find company or be with company? Why not? There's nothing wrong with that. The question is, when you find the company, do you lose yourself in the company? Is it good company that will serve you and not make you unhappy? Or is it company that makes you unhappy? Do you select the wrong company? Good. Well, company is someone to talk to be with, but at the same time, to enjoy being with the company. But at the same time, don't forget this. Never forget life or God, which is telling you every moment that nothing lasts. Don't believe anything. Enjoy everything every moment, but don't believe anything. Don't get attached to it indeed, for God or life will kill it or take it from you. And then you'll be saying, oh, he was such a good friend, or she was. Every friend is going to leave you or is going to die. So don't get attached, you see. That's what this lady's got to teach her children also. Enjoy, but no, nothing lasts forever and there's no free lunch. But you can enjoy anything in the moment as long as you are open and joyous yourself and not expectatious of the other. Okay, it rises when I am still, this drive arises in me. Now that suggests that in the past in your life, that you have, and everybody's got this in them in some way or other, so I'm not being critical of you personally, you have indulged yourself in company and excitement to overcome any quietitude in you. You've run from the quietitude and you've gone for the excitement. Now when we get older and go along, that doesn't go, it stays down there and keeps driving us. As we want to, we get older, we've had a good bit of experience in life. I mean, when I say middle-aged, I mean you're between 30 and 40, right? That's middle-aged to me. So you've had a bit of experience now, haven't you? Whereas in the younger days when we all do that, we haven't had an experience, and the whole of life is to get out there and get experience. Now the spring has round down a bit, you've done a fair bit in your life, and there's an opportunity to be more still in your natural body. But, of course, the excitement that's still wound up in that emotionally in the self, just inside the subconscious, pushes you out again. And you say, well, I don't want to go, I don't need to go. Oh, but I'm lonely or something. The emotion arises, you see. What you got to do for a while is not to suppress yourself, but to know what you're doing. By getting hold of that emotion, you will find it will be an emotion in the stomach, and it starts to churn down there. So what you've got to do for a while is surround it by knowing, no, I'm not going to go and do that, because I'm going to get rid of this thing running my life and driving me, when really, as you have said, sir, I don't want to be driven like that anymore. It's a phony loneliness. So you have to know what you're doing, get around it and say, no, you're not running my life anymore. And that gradually, that's the master telling the servant, you don't run the place anymore. By knowing what you're doing, and don't be depressed or unhappy about what you're doing, because you know what you're doing. That's the way. So we probably find that a lot of these things are going to intermesh, aren't we? Two keys to being responsible. One, I must not judge myself, and I must do what I know to be right and not avoid it. I must not judge myself. You will never be responsible for life or God while you judge yourself. I will never be responsible for light or love or truth or God while I judge myself. What does this mean? It means I have to stop being selfish. Do you know that whenever I am unhappy in that body listening to these words, I am judging myself, going into myself, I am indulging myself, I am being selfish. Now, most of you people have been with me long enough to have been into the can of worms. My goodness, how often you've been in there. And how often the people who were with me for the first time today have been in there over and over, over and over. And what a waste of time it is. The great waste or desert of time is myself. It never ends. There's very few oases in it. You're always stumbling across the desert, feeling dry and parched, and wondering what to do next. Always looking to the horizon, hoping that things are going to get better, because it's a great can of worms that has never solved anything in anybody's life yet, and never will. And yet it is the human race's expectation that if I go into myself, I'll be able to work it out. Rubbish. It has deluded the whole human race since Boadicea, or Julius Caesar, or whoever it was that was first in England or anywhere. It has deluded the whole of the human race since then, and it's still deluding the whole of the human race. There is nothing to go into myself about. It all stinks, it is all problem, all trouble, all self-indulgence. How about that? How about that? Are we talking therapy here? There is no need for therapy. You only need therapy because you think you need therapy. That's the only reason you need therapy, because you think you need therapy. All you need to do is to be honest. And it's because nobody's honest that everybody needs therapy. You do not need therapy. You need to be responsible for yourself. That's all. Then you don't need any master, any teacher. You have to listen to the master, because he's only a reflection. He points the way, that's all. But it's not a therapy. You've got to do it by staying out of yourself. But I'm so unhappy. I've got such a loneliness in me. I've got such a fear in me. Yeah, that's the can of worms. Now, why don't you just feel the can of worms in your stomach and cop it as it is. Feel the pain. Feel the terrible one trying to thrust you into doing things that you don't want to do. Feel it down there. It's a psychic possession down there in your guts. It's not your guts at all. It's a deep, dark, psychic place in another world. The world of self, which is inside the body. Don't go in there. You'll solve nothing. It will drag you in and drag you down. You don't need to go in there if you're honest. But if you want things, it will drag you in there. But let's address this practically. Let's say, using the vernacular, I want a new house. There's nothing wrong with wanting a new house. As long as you take the action now. As soon as it arises in you, I want a new house. You've got to take action. For action, it obliterates self. So I want a new house. Right. What am I going to do about it? That's the first question. What am I going to do about it? Not, I'm going to think about it. Don't think about it. Look, what am I going to do about getting a new house? So you look at how much money you get. You don't think about how much money you've got. It would be much simpler to go to your bank book, open it up and look. Not sit in the lounge room thinking about how much is in the bank book in the other room. That's what you do when you go into yourself. When you think how much you'd love a lover, you want a lover. And you're sitting in the lounge room thinking, or in bed at night, how much you want a lover. Well, what are you doing about it? Oh, well, because the self has never done anything in its life and never will. The can of worms only keeps wriggling and wriggling and never does anything but wriggle and wriggle and wriggle. It is my body that does something. It is me that does something. My body. My will. That if I want something, then I can have it if I can do it. And that's the wonder of alive, isn't it? If I want a lover, then I've got to do something about it. I've got to look and approach and talk. And be honest, because if I'm dishonest, my dishonesty will catch up with me after, and that'll come between us. So be honest from the start. If I want a lover, then someone will be pleased to love me, somewhere, someday. So I will just go and take the action. But will someone want to love me if I'm an angry, violent man? If I'm wanting all the time? If I'm talking about the past all the time, how unhappy a childhood I had, how moody I am, I can't help being moody. Do you want to love me, woman, if I tell you, I can't help being moody? I can't help being angry. Do you want to love me? And here I am lying in bed, oh, how I'd love a lover. That's myself, my silly self, thinking instead of doing. If I want to love a woman, I will approach her. And she will either love me or not. She will see me for what I am, not for what I'm not. I will present her what I am, in openness and simplicity, and not filled with selfishness and self. And then she will either love me or she won't. So that you've got to take action. Now think about it. If I judge myself, I will get more and more unhappy. I am guilty. I am rotten. I don't deserve this. If I do that, I am unhappy. I'm not being responsible. If I judge myself, I will not be responsible. I must give up this judgment of myself. You did what you did, man and woman. You did what you did. Whatever you have been, you have been. So be responsible for it. Don't judge it. You would not be the man or woman you are now if you hadn't been what you were. So stop judging yourself.